You're listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Our special guest today is Whitney Hess, and we're talking about humanizing business. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by SearchEngineNews.com. Since 1997, SEN has been providing website owners with cutting-edge SEO intelligence, helping to keep its member streets ahead of the competition. For a $1 trial and a 60% discount off the life of your membership, visit searchenginenews.com/click to sign up today.
Today, we are talking to Whitney Hess about humanizing business. Whitney is a user experience and personal development coach. She is the owner of Vicarious Partners, where she coaches business leaders on how to more mindfully and compassionately design their products, their companies, and themselves. Many of our listeners may already know Whitney through her blog, formerly Pleasure and Pain, and now WhitneyHess.com, where, among other topics, she advocates for empathy in both business and life. But she also co-hosts the Designing Yourself podcast, which delves into the topic of you, architecting your life and designing the person you truly are. So excited to have you on the show, Whitney. Welcome.
Thank you both so much. It's thrilling to be here.
So Whitney, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Sure. I noticed that when Emily was doing my introduction, she said user experience and personal development coach. So I'll explain the end. I have been a user experience practitioner for the last decade, but a couple years ago, I realized that designing products can be all for naught if we don't take time to design organizations. Mm-hmm. So I started trying to figure out how to do that and eventually found my way to coaching and realized that there's a lot that coaching can bring to the user experience practice. And so now I am still working within the realm of user experience, but with a personal development angle. And that explains the end.
Aha.
So what actually is a personal coach?
Well, I think it's a misnomer that I even call it personal development because it really is both personal and professional. There's really no line between it. But essentially, people come to me when they are at a crossroads in their career or when they're feeling stuck in their current job or their business isn't going the way that they had expected, or they're trying to develop a user experience practice within their company, but they're not getting the buy-in that they believe that they need from their superiors, or they're having challenges managing their clients. There's a variety of reasons, but it's rarely because they don't know how to draw a wireframe or develop a front-end interface. It's often a sort of struggle with something that's happening interpersonally, either in an interaction with people that they work with, whether it be a peer or someone who reports to them or someone who they report to, or it's a struggle that's happening internally. And so I try to help them uncover what that is and then create better habits that allow them to shift their perspective, shift the way that they've been working, and achieve what they really want.
Now, you went through like a complete education program. You got actually certified as a coach, right?
I did. We work in a field where there is no certification required to practice what we do. Right? I mean, their certifications exist, but it's not as if you can't get a job without one the way a plumber or an electrician or an accountant or a lawyer has to be licensed or certified to do their work. In the coaching field, unlike in technology, they actually recognize those certifications much more. It is not required that you be licensed in order to be a coach. But when it comes to working with senior executives at a particular level, there's an expectation that you're certified because it demonstrates a credibility. It demonstrates that you're adhering to a particular set of competencies that you're looking to develop and certain ethical guidelines. So when I started looking into coaching, I realized I wasn't going to get very far high up in the organization if I wasn't mm-hmm. certified. And I found a program that certifies that I felt was in line with my values. It was a year-long program that I started in June of 2013 and finished in June of this year. And it's thrilling to have that behind me. It was incredibly rigorous, far more than I expected going into it. But I'm glad that it was.
Has it already impacted your consultancy business in a positive way?
It is a complete change in my business. Mm. So almost immediately, as soon as I completed the certification, I had a renewed sense of action and agency. Mm-hmm. And I shifted all of the services that I offer from consulting to coaching. And how I'm defining that is consulting is having people outsource their problems to you for you to solve, whereas coaching is helping them solve their own problems.
Yeah, I like that distinction.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't solve other people's problems anymore.
Well, you mentioned that in order to get to, I guess, the senior levels in an organization, having this certification was important. So can you talk a little bit about who your clients are? Are they always the senior levels in an organization? Is that the best place to start?
Definitely not. They are one of my audiences. And in fact, when I started on this journey in March of last year, 2013, I was more convinced then that I would need to work at high levels of the organization than I am now.
Oh.
I learned a lot over the year plus. And so, yes, they're one of my target audiences now, but they're certainly not my whole business. So I have different streams of work that I do. I work with individuals who, as I mentioned earlier, are at a career crossroads or feeling stuck, and they come to me privately, and they're my clients. It has nothing to do with their business. I'm not employed by their company. I'm not being paid by their company in any way. Then there are people who come to me because they have recently been identified as someone who can lead a new user experience practice in the business. Mm-hmm. So let's say they're a visual designer or they are a front-end developer and they've been dabbling in user experience. Maybe they've taught themselves. Maybe they did something that was UX-oriented at a previous job. And the people that they work with have taken notice and have said, you know what? Go for it. Let's create a practice here. And now they're finding themselves having to build a team, having to formalize the practice, having to be more strategic. And they're shifting from a maker to a manager. Mm. And they've never really managed people before. Mm. They might find me through my blog or over Twitter or through a referral. And they realize they need me. And then they have to pitch it to their superiors, and the company ultimately engages with me. But from a day-to-day standpoint, it's that new director of user experience or what have you that I'm interacting with. And then thirdly, there's the VP of design or the head of product or the head of marketing or the founder CEO of a company that is trying to create an organizational shift towards being more customer-centric or up-leveling a user experience practice that they already have, what have you. There's a variety of different things, and they're engaging with me at that much higher level, and I'm working with them more as a strategic partner to identify lots of areas of opportunity in their business to grow. And in that case, I'm finding more often than not, what's giving me the credibility to not just establish or strengthen their user experience practice, but to also create some pretty significant cultural change within mm-hmm. the business, is that background in coaching that I have, and the certification definitely helps.
Well, what's interesting is throughout this conversation, obviously, Emily and I know you from the tech sector. Since making this shift the past year, are you finding more opportunities that aren't specific to, say, user experience or front-end developers or designers? Are you dabbling coaching in other corporate sectors?
You know, I assumed that my audience would be other user experience practitioners, mm-hmm. people who are aspiring to move into user experience, either recent grads or people who are trying to make a career change. And that's definitely the majority of my client base. But every mm-hmm. now and then, I get someone who does something totally different, who just happened upon my site and feels as if we are philosophically aligned, regardless of the fact that they don't do user experience and I don't do what they do. They just feel like our principles are enough of a match that the process that I use in my coaching would work for them. It resonates for them. And I don't really have to know how to do what they do in order to guide them towards identifying what's getting in their way and creating new habits to make a change. So I'm finding that I am expanding, but it's happening more naturally than anything I ever intended.
Interesting.
So as I mentioned in your intro, you're passionate about putting humanity back into business. What does this look like? You mentioned just a second ago that you might have some clients that want to improve their customer service. Is that an example of having a more, and I don't know if this is the right word, but a more humanistic approach to running a business?
Absolutely. So let me try to give you an example from a current client. Let's say you run a design and development shop. I know a couple people who do that. And for the existence of your business up until now, you've really just been an outsourced vendor. So maybe you're focused more on the implementation, and companies come to you when they have at least a design concept, maybe even a finished design, and they just say, build this. And you build it. And as a result, the company has grown based on people who can implement technology solutions. It's been very focused on taking orders from the client and producing results. But then the business gets to a point where they're tired of taking orders, and they realize that when they position themselves in the market as a production shop, that that's how they get treated, mm-hmm. that they aren't actually strategic partners with their clients, that they don't have long-term relationships. They're not helping to develop new ideas because the client thinks of them as extra sets of hands rather than a giant brain. Mm. And they want to figure out how to shift this. How do they get more ownership over the design? How do they get more ownership over strategy? And so they start to try to move earlier and earlier and earlier in the product development process. And where they eventually land is, oh, well, we've got to get more visual design skills. Oh, well, what we really need is user experience skills. So they start conducting user interviews or usability tests. They start doing the methods, but they're still finding that that isn't quite enough to shift in their clients' minds, at least, what it is they can offer. Mm-hmm. More likely than not, it's because internally to the shop, they're not used to thinking about their customers' problems in the same way as a company that has a user experience practice that's integrated into everything they do is. Maybe they're more used to thinking about technology solutions than they are empathizing with the end user's needs. And so it isn't just, this is how you do a user interview. This is how you do a usability test. It's not, user experience isn't something you do. It's a way that you are. It's a philosophy that you hold. It's a set of principles that guides your decisions. And we have to help people who are making those decisions, like this is the component we're going to use on the page, not see that as a technical decision or as a functional decision, but to see it as a human decision. That extra click could change how well someone's able to do their work, how much money they make, how well they're able to provide for their children. I mean, these may not be things that their team thinks about on a regular basis. So if that's not internal to the way they operate, to their mindset, then they're not going to necessarily be able to have that significant impact on their client and partner with them in that strategic way. So that's what I mean about bringing humanity into business, is to help people recognize the impact of their work, to help make them more empathetic, to help them collaborate better with one another, to help them see who they serve as whole human beings, not just nameless faces, pieces of data that show up in their web analytics tools. And it's all of those pieces of the puzzle that I'm trying to explain, advocate for, and encourage when I'm working with my clients.
So it's a way of thinking, a way of approaching the work that you do, instead of looking at it discreetly as an end product or an end result and thinking about the effect it has.
Thinking is just a small piece of it. It's a way of thinking. It's a way of feeling. It's a way of acting. I think it's a way of being.
Well, for me, the way I seem to interpret it is that when, you know, as a web designer, web developer, we get these website issues or problems, and sometimes some of us would just take a look at it as in like, okay, put the buy button there, or let's just put everything together so it looks nice. But you know, not enough perhaps people are thinking about, well, what's the point? What is the end goal of the site in general, and how does this part of the puzzle fit into that entire thing, and how does it enhance people's day? Like, why does the business even exist?
Yes.
Why are you providing? You know what I mean? Like, why does this business exist? Why are people choosing your service or your product over others? Those kind of things. And this one buy now page or buy now button, that's just a part of that overall idea.
Yes.
You know, so if you actually understood the why, and like, why is this successful? Why is this particular business person pursuing this particular solution and selling it? Then if you understood that and you understood their customers, then as somebody with the skill sets we have, like HTML, CSS design, we can make suggestions on the implementation, not just take an order saying, put the button over there.
Yes. And the key to what you said is why the business even exists.
Right.
Most people who run businesses don't think about that every day, because running a business has so much busy work involved. There's so many moving parts that you're just focused at the, you're looking at the business 1 centimeter away from your nose day in and day out. Part of what I do is come in and help them to reconnect with why the business exists in the first place. What problem are they trying to solve? What change are they trying to create in the world? And for whom? Not everyone. Everyone is not a target audience.
Right.
Who are they really trying to serve? What problems are those people really facing? What do they truly need? How do they really feel? And finding that overlap, that sweet spot between the user's needs and the business's objectives. And by setting that up from the beginning, it gives all of the work that the business does greater meaning.
Right.
So when you're putting the buy button on the page, yes, that it be visually pleasing and that there be good page balance and negative space and good contrast between the colors and sizes and good hierarchy of information. All of that is still very true, very relevant, but it has such a deeper meaning because you understand that by enabling someone to purchase this, you are supporting their business in this way, supporting their job in this way, supporting their family in this way, that you're truly helping another human being. Because to me, all a web page, an app, you know, anything that's digital that we create, all it really is a conversation between a company and a customer. It is just facilitated by the technology. What kind of conversation do you want to have? The company that I try to work in, the companies that I surround myself with, that I try to help, are companies who want the conversation with their customers to be, how can we best serve you? How can we make your pain go away? How can we get you off of the computer faster so that you can get back to doing what you really love? It's unfortunate in our society that it's like using the tech is the ends. It should be the means to an end, not the end itself.
Right.
And reconnecting people with that and reminding them of why they exist, and who they serve and infiltrating all layers of the organization so that that's felt and internalized so that people have much more meaning when they're doing the work that they do, that they can think more strategically about their decisions. That's ultimately what I believe the overarching purpose of user experience is. And I'm using coaching as another mechanism to get in and to help them to recognize that.
So you mentioned that having more of the being, the feeling, the thinking, the acting, all of that, having it be more focused on the human experience, the user experience, that it helps a company who embraces this have more meaning in their work. It helps them hopefully deliver, I would guess, better products and services to their clients. Are business owners, when they come to you, or business managers, are they looking for really discrete, tangible benefits, like we need to increase sales by X percent? Or are they coming because they really want to feel that more meaning aspect?
Oh, well, come on. Who's like, I want to feel more meaning in my work. Let me go on Google and search for that.
Some people can appreciate that.
They can appreciate it once they're presented with it. But no. People have their own problems that they're trying to solve, and they too are 1 centimeter away from their work. So they're seeing the immediate pains. There's many different layers. So I'll give you an example of a client that I'm working with now. They are a design and development shop. They get hired primarily to implement designs that have been done internally by brands or by other agencies. They are offshore, so they're an inexpensive option. And they have user experience talent in-house, and they have user experience backgrounds, the founders. However, the market, they felt, was dictating, let's do a lot of the post-launch support. That's where we're going to get that ongoing revenue from. Let's do SEO optimization. Let's do, I don't know, analytics. Let's do usability, not even usability testing, but let's do kind of some tweaks, some technical support post-launch that they could charge on a monthly basis, because that's where they found their clients really didn't have anyone else to go to. And so they wanted to work with me because both the founders and the team doesn't really want to be doing that. They want more ownership over the end-to-end site experience. They have the chops to do it, but they've positioned themselves in such a way they're not really being asked or empowered to do that, and they feel like they've become order takers. So they came to me saying, how do we get more design projects? How do we present ourselves more as user experience centric? How do we get more projects locally rather than just be seen as offshore? And in my coaching with them, we are addressing that, but that is the symptom, not the cause. The cause of the problem, the reason why they're not making money in these areas, why they're being asked to do these other things, why they're not being the strategic partners to their clients that they want to be, is because somewhere along the way, they convince themselves that what they do is make websites for a living. And that couldn't be furthest from the truth. How they do what they do is make websites for a living, but they don't do that because that's what they're passionate about. I quite honestly don't think that people could be passionate about making websites. I think that...
Emily, I don't know.
I know.
People are passionate about what those websites facilitate, how people use them, what they create in the world, what they remove from the world, you know, the change that they enable. It's not the website itself. It's rare, but it happens that you go to a bookstore and you're just like, ah, sheets of paper and bindings. Whoa. It's like, no, there's stories in there. There's emotion. There's power. There's connection. I'm going to see myself reflected, or it's going to take me away to a faraway land that I could never go. That's what's in the bookstore, not just a bunch of pieces of paper bound together with glue. There are the few who are really enamored with the craftsmanship of the book. And I've actually taken bookbinding classes because I'm one of those people. Just as there are some people who are enamored by the craftsmanship of the website, but I would say 99.99999% of people are doing it because of what it creates, because of what it enables. So this company, the one that I was just describing, along the way forgot that the reason they exist is because they're trying to change the culture of their country. The country is not a place where the customer is always right. That's the way we see it in America. But that's not the way their country experiences it. And they believe that there is a hunger for that to shift culturally. They believe that user experience can educate businesses, large telecoms, small startups, agencies, and everything in between, that they really are in service of their customers. That if they design with the customer in mind, if they craft an experience that pleases their customers or that makes their pains go away, that it will differentiate them as a business and it will increase their profits, it will decrease their costs, and it will make their brand soar. They believe that, but at some point along the way, they forgot and they convinced themselves, we just make websites. And it's a lot less motivating when you go to work every day thinking, I'm going to make some websites today, than it is to think, I am going to change the culture of this country because my people deserve better.
Actually, this reminds me, have you ever read a book called What Should I Do With My Life by Poe Bronson?
No.
It's an excellent book. It's just full of stories. Poe Bronson went and interviewed people who asked themselves that question. They had various careers that worked out and didn't work out. And one of the lessons or stories was essentially how trapped you can be by being successful in something you don't actually want to do.
You know what I mean? I experienced that personally.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, that particular tenet sounds like there's a lot of businesses out there where they might be struggling or they're doing okay, but not great. And part of it is because, well, they're not maybe dire, but they're not where they want to be. And part of it is because it could be comfortable staying where things are, right? You know, being successful again in something you don't even really want to do. But since it's paying the bills, I guess this is the way things should be. Maybe, I don't know. This actually leads me to a question where how can more people like, you know, business owners or managers, leaders, recognize they need more humanity? Like, how do they know? Like, especially, and like, you know, it's obvious when things are struggling that people ask for help. But how do we not get to that point? Like, not get to the point where I really need help now or else everything's going to go to crap. How can people get more humanity in the organization, recognize they need that?
Well, firstly, when you're moving a million miles a minute, it can be very challenging or near impossible to recognize that you're moving in the wrong direction.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So one of the most crucial things that any business can do is take a pause. It does not mean that you turn away dollars and revenue. It does not mean that you necessarily change everything you're doing as a business or that the whole business has to stop. But I really feel strongly that the key decision makers have to have periodic periods of rest. And it's only in those periods of rest that you're able to truly reflect and quiet and still yourself and listen to yourself. Otherwise, sometimes our hyperactivity represses a lot of our emotions and we're not able to listen to them as clearly. So in those periods of rest, you can then start to ask yourself some important questions. Am I doing work I don't want to be doing? Am I not getting the work I want to be getting? Am I happy? Are my people happy? Are we healthy? Are people sick all the time? Are people leaving all the time? Do we have a good balance? Do we feel rushed? Do we have room to do things outside of making money? Or is there constantly a pressure to make money that we don't get to do projects just for fun? Is there fun Have we lost the fun? Did we ever have fun in the first place?
So regarding these breaks, is there a difference between a break and a vacation?
Well, I don't know about you, but these days, when I take a vacation, I then need a vacation for my vacation afterwards.
Yeah.
I don't know that a vacation is what we're talking about here. In fact, I'm going to rephrase that. I know that I'm not talking about a vacation here. A vacation is what you do to take care of yourself. Hopefully, you are not running around like a maniac on vacation so that you're actually resting and rejuvenating in that time period. But that should not be about work. That should be about you. You should live outside of work. What I'm referring to with a break, and I don't really want to call it a break because it sounds like you're going to stop doing something. Just a pause. A pause is a time to look back in time and reflect, and a time to feel into the present, and a time to plan for the future. This is a business activity. This should be done during business hours. I don't believe that it should be done on personal time because a business needs to be sustainable.
Right.
And sustainability means that it has to be able to grow and exist and thrive with appropriate balance. That you can't be maxed out on energy, maxed out on spending, maxed out on resources, maxed out on everything all of the time. That's not sustainable because then there's no room to grow. So what I'm referring to is about creating space. It's about creating space around the day-to-day so that you're able to plan for the future, so that you're able to reflect on the past, so that you're able to feel into what is happening today. Literally feel the energy of the business, feel the energy of the individuals who make up the business. Because if we're not paying attention right now to what's going on around us, we're going to miss it. And it's only going to be 10,000 miles down the road that it finally catches up to us. And then we are way further off course than we would have been had we taken just a moment to recognize it was there and course correct.
Let me see if this sounds like what you mean. I know, for example, that Emily and I don't have meetings on Mondays, like with other clients. We don't respond to emails necessarily. We don't do any HTML, CSS perhaps, you know, unless I guess there's a deadline, but that's another story. But generally speaking, we try to focus on bright umbrella work on Mondays. So it's like taking a break from the actual nitty gritty of like designing and developing and just like thinking about, well, what can we do to help our business, things like that? Or is it something different? Like I'm trying to figure out like, how do you consciously structure a break within
a pause? You
know, yeah, pause, a break, however you want to call it, without actually leaving the office.
So what you're describing of not doing client work on Mondays is an example of how this can work for a business. And there is no one-size-fits-all solution.
Sure.
So a big part of my work is getting to know the people in the business, getting to know the culture, so that I can make recommendations or lead them to the discovery of what's best for them as individuals. Not because there's this one thing that every business can do. For the two of you, it makes sense for you to not do client work on Mondays. Now, there's two pieces of this. There is the policy definition, which was the two of you coming together and say, we're going to make it a policy to not work on Mondays. And then there's the execution, which is not actually working on Mondays. You need both.
Right.
So I have similar things to what you're describing in my calendar, and it shifts based on what projects I've got going on because my calendar year isn't consistent from week to week because I have different clients, different engagements, and different requirements for those engagements. But periodically, I'm in a space where I block Mondays and Wednesdays, no meetings, and I produce. Because for me, days that are filled with meetings are not conducive to producing. I don't even feel that having three meetings in the morning is conducive to producing in the afternoon. because my mode is already set by having those meetings. There's a great essay by Paul Graham, The Maker Versus the Manager Schedule. And there's maker days where your focus, not a single interruption, which is maybe what you both are doing on your Mondays, but you may be each other's interruption, so you might be conscious of that. And then there's the manager days, which is having meetings, client presentations, fielding emails, etc. So I try to carve out 2 days a week in which I'm not having any meetings so that I can focus on producing. When I'm in a specific kind of client engagement, that may not be realistic. So then I have to either shift those days to other days of the week, or I tell myself weekends are off limits. Yes, I'm independent. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, I am just me, and I have to be flexible, and that means I live my business, but I would prefer to live my life. So I will be very stringent with at least one of the days on the weekend, if not both, are not for working. It's for physical activity, hanging out with my loved ones, running errands, cleaning, watching TV, just whatever, frolicking, all the things that have nothing to do with my business, but if I'm smart enough, realize have everything to do with my business because they make me better.
Mm-hmm.
That's our examples. There's so many other examples. Let me tell you a few. Medium, the blogging platform, mm-hmm, or essay platform, whatever you want to call them, they have group meditations every morning.
Interesting.
Where Ev, co-founder of Twitter and the founder of Medium, is a regular participant. You can come in the morning. Everyone's seated in a large room without tables, and you are having your morning meditation to get grounded, to listen to yourself, to clear your mind, to just watch your breath, to be in touch with yourself as a whole human being who is more than just a mind, but a heart and a body. And just those 5 or 10 minutes in the morning can completely change the course of your day. Medium also has a policy where every meeting starts with a 2-minute pause. So if you have an hour-long meeting and you have 10 people in the room, you begin the meeting with a 2-minute, essentially, meditation, just not speaking, 2 minutes. The reason that exists is because they found that when you book meetings from 10 to 11 and 11 to 12 and 12 to 1 and 1 to 2, when you get to your 2 o'clock, you're still thinking about your 1 o'clock that ended a minute ago and vice versa. So they wanted to provide a buffer so that people could truly arrive at the meeting, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a pause. That's not taking time off of work. That's not going on a retreat or an offsite. That's not shutting down for the month of July and not accepting client work. It's another way of taking stock of where you are, who you are, how you feel, what you're experiencing, and acknowledging it before you just pummel through the rest of your day, mm-hmm, as most of us do most of the time.
So before we go on, we'd like to take a moment again to thank our sponsor, SearchEngineNews.com. Since 1997, SEN has been providing website owners with cutting-edge SEO intelligence. For a $1 trial and a 60% discount off the life of your membership, visit SearchEngineNews.com/click. To sign up today.
So Whitney, I've been thinking about the stuff you're describing and it resonates with me. I mean, you and I have talked before, a lot of this stuff resonates because my work is more than just the practical execution of something. It's how I want it to make me feel and how I want my life to be. But I wonder if every person is going to be open to that concept of taking a pause or even taking the time to ask themselves questions about happiness. So I'm guessing that when someone comes to work, hires you to help them, they're already embracing that. But do you ever encounter someone who's kind of resistant to that, these things that you're suggesting that are kind of, I don't know the word, they're more feeling and being as opposed to thinking and doing. And so how do you help them recognize the value of these things?
You start with people where they are, not where you want them to be. So I've heard this described once like an avocado, one of my favorite things on earth. It's a fruit. It has a seed.
Yum.
The avocado fruit has a skin. It's a little rough, dark, but it's pretty thin. But when you first hold an avocado, you are holding basically its skin. For some companies, that's where we're working. We are focused on the skin. It's a skin problem. Our websites are, we're getting customer complaints. There must be a problem with the interface. We need to move the buttons around. We need to relabel the nav. We need to spruce up the copy, change our tone. We need to be responsive. We need to be mobile friendly. These are the things that people at the skin level are talking about. It's all of that mechanics. Then when you pull back the skin, you have the pulp. Is that what it's called? The mushy.
Meat.
The flesh?
Yeah, the
flesh.
Part.
The flesh.
The
thank
flesh.
You. The flesh. You've got the flesh just beneath the skin level. Maybe then you're talking about how the reason we need a responsive site is because we can't always predict how people will be accessing our system. They might need to do the same things, the same tasks on their phone as they would on their desktop computer. It's not necessarily up to us to define which features are more relevant on mobile or on desktop than they are on mobile. Maybe we can't make that claim because there's a lot more that we don't understand. So what is the reasoning behind creating a responsive site? How can we put the highest priority elements first? How can we adapt some of the images so that they're more clearly seen in a mobile context without eliminating the possibilities on desktop? So we're starting to talk about the why, the principles a bit behind all of these things. And it isn't just we need a responsive site because everyone's supposed to have a responsive site. Then there's the pit or the seed. That is the core of the avocado. And so at times the company is at a stage where you can discuss the reason why we can't assume what people need when they need it, what platform they're using, blah, 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 is because we want to serve people regardless of how they access us. This is the nature of the relationship we want to have with our customers. This is our purpose. This is the problem that we see in the world. This is the shift we're trying to create. It's getting richer and richer. And then there's something that's even deeper than the seed. And it's something almost none of us can see because that damn avocado pit is impossible to cut. And it's the spark. It is that center of the seed under the flesh, under the skin of the avocado that caused the avocado to grow. And that is a very deep level. And most companies never get there because most people never get there. But regardless of where the company is, there's something that I can work on with them to help them get one level deeper.
When you were explaining all of that, actually, that reminded me of our episode with Aisha Satterwhite, Technology for Social Good, especially because when you're looking at the whys, I mean, we could talk about the donation implementation or surveys that they do or the email campaigns and all that stuff. But at the very end of it all, it's because they want to affect change in the particular society. And so having that type of idea and figuring out where people are actually wanting to speak to them. And that's part of the reason why they're even implementing these technologies in the first place and having these particular campaigns, because that's where their people are. That's where the people are already talking and interacting. So it's definitely interesting, like when throughout this episode, we've been kind of talking about like a little like hinting towards e-commerce because we're using the buy now and all those kind of things. But technology can be empowering in more than just commerce. It could have a variety of different ways we can impact people's like behavior and emotions in their lives.
Absolutely. And it can be done through e-commerce as well.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the power of Etsy. Mm-hmm. People making things by hand that they love, preserving the handcraft tradition of the American history, of preserving people's culture, preserving handwork in general. What about preserving individual to individual commerce? That's getting erased in our country. Mm-hmm. So even the buy now button has the power to create change in the world that is far, far more than just getting someone to buy something. I think what you're getting at is the purpose, the underlying meaning behind what we do. And I feel passionately that no one wants their obituary to read, "She made websites." They want it to say, "She helped cancer patients get funding from friends when the insurance companies would no longer pay." They want it to say, "She helped up-and-coming young designers be noticed in an industry that only recognizes name brands." She helped nonprofits connect with foundations that could fund their dream projects. She allowed people to order food online so that they could continue to do what they're most passionate about without wasting time going grocery shopping. I mean, some of us change the world through kind of humanitarian efforts. Others of us do it through convenience. There's nothing less meaningful in my mind about Seamless, which is a client that I worked with in New York that allows people to order food from restaurants online, than there is about Kickstarter or Etsy or eBay. I mean, there's meaning in all of it. It's just about connecting with what that meaning is so that you know why you're doing what you're doing and you can get excited about it so that there's an underlying purpose and it isn't just because making websites is cool.
If someone is feeling that this is a something they want to explore for their own business, but they're not really in a position where they can have someone come in and help them discover these meanings or even discover what it is they're trying to change, is there anything that you would suggest that business owner do on their own to sort of help them start discovering the meaning in at their core that they maybe don't get a chance to look at or think about regularly? You mentioned a pause, but is there anything else that you could suggest, maybe exercises or even resources that you could point people to?
I can name a bunch of exercises, and Emily, we've talked about some of these before, but there's the pause. There's writing every morning, so having a journal and just writing everything.
That was one of those things in the artist way.
Yes. So in the artist way, there are two exercises that are essentially encouraged that you do throughout the 12-week period of reading this book. So it's 12 chapters, one chapter a week, and one of those exercises is morning pages. And the idea is that you have a notepad and a pen next to your bed, and the first thing you do when you wake up, before you pee, before you make your coffee, before you do anything, before you check your email, you write down everything that's on your mind, at least 3 pages, 8.5 by 11, back to back. And what that does is it allows you to empty out everything that's living in your mind that you may not even be conscious of. So it could be all the things that you have to do today. It could be what you were dreaming about last night. It could be that fight that you had with your significant other the other day that's still nagging at you, or this thing that you have to plan that's really worrying you, or whatever. But you're just getting it all down. You could even write, "I have no idea, I have no idea, I have no idea, I have no idea," for 3 pages over. You'd be surprised what starts to come out after you've written it 30 times. So the point is that it is giving you an opportunity to be in touch with yourself. So for any company or any individual that is sensing something in the conversation that we're having that, maybe this somehow applies to me, but I have no idea how, the first step is to spend some time with yourself, to start listening to what you are trying to tell yourself, but you've busied yourself so much that you can't hear. So it could be a pause where all you're doing is not talking, not thinking, not listening to anyone else, not reading your phone, just stopping and breathing for 2 minutes. It could be doing this journaling exercise. Another one of the exercises in the Artist's Way is having basically a solo date once a week. So by yourself, you go see a show, you go to a gallery exhibit, you go to your favorite craft store, you take a walk through the park, you do a collage, you draw, you do anything, you garden, anything that is for you, by you, and alone, 1 hour a week.
I love that last one. I feel like it's interesting talking to some friends and stuff how difficult that last part is, like trying to do something they want for pleasure, but just completely by themselves. Because I was discussing with a girlfriend about how she went to a movie by herself for the first time ever in her life. And I was surprised because she was so nervous about it. Like, she was so nervous that, like, I'm dating myself today. There is no friend, guy, nobody else here but me, because I really want to watch this movie now. And she said she had to talk herself into it. And it's interesting that just having that simple act, like, it shows you that you can, that there's benefits to being by yourself and recognizing and, like, pausing to see what you actually can be without having to have justification of somebody else, I think, in some ways.
Why do you think she was so nervous about going to the movies alone?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I would assume is that she's just never had a chance to be alone in her life in a particular time. Like, she's just so used to being with somebody else.
Oh, and I wonder if there's some level of fear to be alone with yourself, because when you are alone with yourself, that's when all of a sudden you start asking yourself critical questions like, am I happy? You know,
exactly.
Do I have a purpose?
Yes.
Exactly.
That's true.
Yes. Because when you're alone, suddenly everything comes to the surface. All of the emotions.
Right.
I have a client who, when he goes to like a yoga class and it's the end of the yoga class in Shavasana where all you're doing is laying there, he is so overcome with emotion that he's like embarrassed because he's in public and it makes him not even want to go to yoga to stretch his body and to strengthen his body, strengthen his core and improve his balance. Because of those 5-10 minutes at the end, he gets so emotional and he's not an emotional guy. And he's like, what is it about that time? Because he's not doing anything. We are constantly doing all the time. And we've got our phones in our hands. And if we have 30 seconds of waiting on the line, we're pulling out our phone to read something or to text something or to look on Facebook. We are constantly occupying ourselves. And something pretty major happens when you stop trying to occupy yourself. You start feeling. You start paying attention to your feelings. You start listening to what's going on. And that clues you in to where the work needs to be done. You're able then to recognize it and you can confront it and do something about it. But most of us are so not used to, as you said, being with ourselves that we are so afraid of what we might find that we just power through and we just keep doing. But one of my favorite sayings is human being, not human doing. We are not doings.
Right.
We are beings. And we do too much. And that buries a lot of our own personal truth. And so when you ask, what can a business do or what can an individual do when they don't have the resources to hire someone like me to start to identify where they may need to grow, the first step is to just be. It could be done in silence with sitting. It could be done through writing. It could be done with a walk in nature. It could be done through writing music. It could be done in a million and one ways. Everyone is different. but you can tap into what is just being for you and start listening to yourself, and the clues reside there.
I have to say, this reminded me of this brilliant Louis C.K. rant that he had while he was on Conan. And he was ranting about how he doesn't like smartphones. And he was trying to say that people these days, like, he was listening to a song in his car, and it was a sad Bruce Springsteen song. So he was getting sad, and he's like, oh, his first inclination was to get onto his phone immediately and text 50 people. And then he decided, wait, no, I'm not going to text those people. I'm just going to be sad. Just going to be sad for a bit. And he let it come. And then he actually pulled over and he cried. And then he was happy again.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It was the most, of course, my delivery isn't Louis C.K. level. But
that was pretty good.
But that was his main point, was that you let yourself, like, it's okay to let yourself pause and have these emotions and you'll be fine.
The irony is that you overcome the emotion, you go through it, and you heal faster when you allow yourself to feel it.
Right.
When you suppress it, you are only perpetuating your pain. And the same goes for a business. Because all a business is a collection of individual human beings showing up together to work on towards a shared vision, agreeing to work together every day and to call themselves a company. But a company, a business, does not exist without the human beings that make it. So if we can just deal with what we're feeling and use that to move us forward, we will be happier, more fulfilled, and more excited by and passionate about our work than if we just plow through continuing to suppress what we really feel, because it will rear its ugly head one way or another. And then we're really going to have damage control to do that we could have avoided had we just taken the time to listen to ourselves all along.
Well, I think that's a great note to end on. And
although I really want to get a personal development coach now.
Yes. But before we finish up, we do have our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better. Are you ready, Whitney?
I think I'm ready. Let's try it.
Okay, first question, Mac OS or Windows?
Mac.
What is your favorite mobile app?
Up.
Up. What is Up?
It's an activity tracker, so I know what the steps that I've taken, how much sleep I got. I can put my eating into it. It's not really my favorite, but it's the one I use the most.
Okay. What's your least favorite thing about social media?
Mean people.
What profession other than yours would you like to attempt?
Interior designer.
Very cool. Opposite question. What profession would you not like to do?
Toll booth operator.
Oh, God. Yeah.
That's a first. That job has got to suck.
People are so mean to toll booth operators.
Yeah, they don't even pay attention to them.
Exactly.
All right. Who is the web professional you admire the most?
Boy. I don't see people as web professionals.
Who is the human you admire the most?
I just don't think that way. I'm sorry. I can't think of anyone. I have been so blessed to work with the people that I admire the most. And then when you start to get to know people, you see them as people and not people to admire. So I can't answer that.
All right. What music do you like to work to?
I don't. Most of my work is with other people, and I'm not producing that much, so can't really have music on while I'm working.
What's your secret talent?
I can rap.
Oh, my goodness.
Are you kidding? Really?
You're not going to make me do it now, but I can.
I won't make you do it, but that's really awesome.
That's amazing.
If you're ever at karaoke with me, I can prove it.
Oh, okay. You and me, karaoke. All right. What's the most recent book you read?
Well, I'm rereading The Power of Now, which is a book that I've read many times. So I guess that's the most recent, but I had already read it.
All right, last question. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Neither.
You're our second guest this year who had neither.
I've only seen episode 4 of Star Wars, which is the first one, right?
Yes.
Okay. I was conned by my high school boyfriend's 6-year-old sister into watching that, so I couldn't say no to her because she was super cute. I haven't seen the others. And Star Trek, I never watched on TV, but I've seen a couple of the movies, but I couldn't tell you which one. I'm not really into fantasy.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, Whitney.
Thank you both so much for having me. I enjoyed your questions.
So in case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
WhitneyHess.com or at Whitney Hess on Twitter. I will probably respond within the day. So reach out to me if you want to talk more about any of this.
Awesome. Thanks again, Whitney. I'm so glad we finally got you on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
We'd now like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, SearchEngineNews.com and Pixel and Tonic.
And thanks to our partners, Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
We also want to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast or visit our website, ControlClickCast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode, which will be the last episode of 2014, when Leigh and I will take a look back at the year. And we also have a special guest joining us, our intern for Bright Umbrella. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leigh Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Click Cast. See you next time.
Cheers.